Hi, my name is Russell Norman, and this is a podcast called Read Lots, Write Lots, a podcast for those who love to write. In today's episode, I'll be continuing our holiday series of showcasing another of the many talented writers we have talked to over the past year. In this episode, I'm going to be reading a sad but powerful story by Jonathan Blow called Forest Fires, Sole Survivor. He wrote this story in response to a readsy prompt, write a story set in the summer when it suddenly starts to snow. Jonathan addresses this prompt in an unexpected and quite brilliantly original way. I hope you'll enjoy this story as much as we did. The day was deadly still, the summer sky ablaze with colour, awash with silent splendour. Thick, grey-white flakes drifted down from above, blanketing the earth. Andrew made his ponderous way up the slope between the trees, marvelling at the sight he'd never thought he'd live to see. He was all alone, his sneakers crunching through the snowdrifts and his breath rasping from his narrow chest, the only sound in the tomb-like stillness. This was his moment. The brittle day had the same haunting, hallowed feel of Easter Mass at St. Mark's. A sacred silence. Reverence in the face of the unspeakably profound. This had been his secret dream, his heart's burning desire. It was snowing. "Now blow out your candles and make a wish, sweetie, but don't tell." "Snow. I wish it would snow, Mum," 5-year-old Andrew squealed. Proud parents regarded their son fondly. "You know we don't get snow here, big guy," his father replied, laughing and ruffing the boy's hair. "But as soon as you're old enough, we'll take you on a skiing trip north. You'll see plenty of snow then."
"Promise?"
"Of course. Now, what say we open some presents?" When Andrew got sick 2 years later, he knew he'd never get his wish. He couldn't make out the words of the whispered conversations between his parents and the doctors, but he didn't need to. He could read his doom in his parents' eyes as they fussed carelessly at his hospital bedside, assuring him he was going to be just fine. Andrew knew he was dying. Mortality is a concept not easily grasped by a 7-year-old's mind, but reality is a cruel teacher, and despite his age, the situation allowed for neither ignorance nor denial. He heard it in his mother's overbright voice. He saw it in his father's face as he turned away, unable to meet his son's eyes, and in the pitying stares of the nurses as they did just the opposite, ogling him like some exotic caged creature on the verge of extinction. He sensed it in the steady drip-drip of a leaky faucet in the bathroom across the hall late at night, and in the incessant insectile buzz of the overhead fluorescence. Most of all, he felt it in his every small movement and laboured breath as his body steadily failed, shutting down like a piece of overused machinery, unable to continue. Yet despite all assurances to the contrary, Andrew knew he was dying.
"Mum, what's..."
Andrew squinted, concentrating on pronouncing the big word.
"Leukemia."
"Hey, sweetie," she wiped her brimming eyes and forced a note of false cheer into her voice. "It's a problem with your bone marrow. It happens to little kids sometimes. But don't worry, the doctors know what they are doing. They're going to fix you up good as new."
"But Mum, that machine they put me in, it makes me feel lousy. Real sick, you know? And tired all the time. I'm so tired."
He was interrupted by a savage yawn that illustrated the point.
"I wish they'd just leave me alone."
His mother cast about for the right words, as if explaining radiation treatment for end-stage terminal leukemia to a dying son was merely a matter of eloquence and delivery.
"Look, Andy, you need to trust them. They know what they're doing. It's like..."
What was it like?
"You remember the forest fires last year, right?"
"Yeah?" Andrew's eyes lit up at the memory. He'd watched the evening news with his parents, captivated by the aerial footage of acres going up in flames, unaware at the time of his cancerous, tainted blood, soon to raise his world to the ground,
just as the fires seemed set to do with the surrounding countryside. That was cool and scary. It sure was, his mother agreed. But remember what your father told you, that the seeds of the redwood trees need heat to germinate. If there were no fires, there would be no new trees. We wouldn't have our beautiful forests. So, destroying things can be good? Andrew asked after some careful consideration. Yes, sweetie, sometimes destroying things can be good. That's what the doctors are doing to you. They're burning away the bad cells so that new, healthy ones can grow. I know it hurts, but it's helping you. Andy, I promise. Okay, Mum, he muttered, eyelids growing suddenly heavy and slipping closed, as they so often did lately. She watched her sleeping son, biting her lip to hold back the flood of tears that threatened to overwhelm her, heart full to bursting with love for her precious, vulnerable child. Desperate, terrifying, helpless love. Mommy? Andrew mumbled, just as she was about to leave. Yes, sweetie, I'm here. I wish I wasn't going to die before you and Daddy. She broke then. Anguish streamed down her face and choked back the reflective words of reassurance she wanted so desperately to offer, but could not. It didn't matter. The inevitable course of reality isn't altered by futile denial and false hope. Words cannot change what is. Even so, she would still have told him not to think of such things, that it wasn't going to happen, but by the time she felt able to speak, her son had already gone back to sleep. Andrew was finally released from hospital just before Christmas. A small family tried bravely to rekindle the festive atmospheres of holidays gone by, but knowing it would likely be the boy's last Christmas was a crushing burden. The radiation therapy had not been successful. Andrew had been given less than a year to live. Caught between frantic desperation to make the occasion a special one and the pervasive pall of anguish that invaded and settled in like an unwelcome house guest, his parents did the best they could. Their actions were inherently selfish, for they were merely creating memories. And for whom are those intended but the living? The survivors? The dead do not remember. Fortunately, they remained blissfully ignorant of this. Such awareness would have been devastating. Introspection is like a surgical blade, useful when applied with proper skill, but deadly when wielded with reckless abandon. Denial can be a sanctuary for sanity. Sometimes secrets are necessary for survival, and sometimes the most important secrets are the ones we keep from ourselves. As the new year dawned, the strain began to take its toll. Andrew's parents argued bitterly. They fought about everything, money, politics, his work, and her lack thereof. The inevitable call for him to leave on assignment that all career military personnel are liable for, and her blunt insistence that it amounted to abandoning his family in their hour of greatest need. They fought with each other because they couldn't confront the true enemy, the cancerous mutation in their son's bone marrow and his relentless descent day after dreadful day into death. Why do you have to go, Todd? Why now, for Christ's sake? Listen, Beth, it's not like I've got a choice. You know how it is. We've just gone to DEFCON 4. Tell them no. Tell them your son's dying, goddammit. Isn't that a valid reason? A pause, a shaky intake of breath. We need you here. I need you here. I can't, honey. I need you to be strong. You've got to trust me. I have to go. But it won't be for long. This is serious. If the Chinese... Fuck the Chinese and fuck you. Todd, mister, serve and protect. You're a coward. Running off to save the country because you're too shit scared to stay here and deal with the reality. She motioned vaguely with her hand, leaving no doubt who the reality was. Unobserved from the shadows of the doorway, Andrew silently retreated, leaving his parents to their bickering. The sound of his mother's sobbing following him down to the basement before he shut the heavy oak door softly behind him. Then there was only the resounding scream of silence. The next morning, Andrew's father left in a military jeep for the nearby Air Force base. He would not see his son alive again. Andrew now paused between the trees, halfway up the hill at the far end of the property. He marvelled at the soft, susurrant whisper of the falling snow, the only disturbance in the unearthly silence that reigned. He thought about the difficult months that had followed his father's departure. Andrew had taken to spending more and more time in the basement, among his father's old tools and the various odds and ends that families tend to accumulate and store away, like squirrels saving for a winter that'll never come. He found the musty smell refreshing. The dust and despair that abounded in his subterranean hideout were comforting reminders that he was not alone, that all things eventually decay and fade away, that nothing lasts forever, nor is it meant to. At only 8 years old, he couldn't articulate this notion, of course, but perhaps that's why he felt it so powerfully. Truly profound is always diminished when put into words. Unspoken and unrecognized, this fascination with destruction, the same he had felt at the sight of the forest fires years ago, had become Andrew's secret passion. He felt safe in the basement, protected from the absurdly normal world outside, in which he had concluded he had neither place nor part. The mouldy damp provided sweet relief from the heat as spring gave way to sweltering summer, soothed his fevered thoughts, embraced him. Had he been older and cursed with greater self-awareness, Andrew might have likened his affinity with the basement sanctuary to a primal longing for the safety of the womb, or perhaps a tomb. Andrew's need for retreat was exacerbated by his mother's increasingly erratic behaviour. She was often short with him, snapping at him for no reason and then immediately bursting into tears and apologising, hugging him tight. She slept more and more, as if her dreams were a refuge from the harsh reality of life with a dying son and without a dutiful husband, but the anguish moans she let loose while asleep gave truth to the lie. When not sleeping or staring blankly out into middle distance, she was glued to the television set, hungrily absorbing the ever-darkened news from abroad. "Mommy, what's a—" Andrew furrowed his brow, concentrating hard. "Nuclear explosion," he finished carefully, motioning his head to the TV where the breathless news anchor was talking about the ever-increasing threat of the new Sino-Japanese alliance and unheeded calls for nuclear disarmament. "Nuclear, sweetie," she corrected absently, eyes never leaving the screen. "It's kind of a bomb, big one." "Is there going to be one here?" She turned to face him as if only just becoming aware of his presence. "No, of course not. It's just talk, Andy. Your father's gone off to make sure nothing bad happens. He'll keep us safe." "Promise?" "Yes, sweetie, I promise." She leaned over and rested a soothing hand on his barren brow. "There's nothing to worry about. It's okay." Perhaps it was the sudden, unexpected display of warmth, a glimpse of his mother of old. Perhaps it was the same hollow reassurances, empty and meaningless, more promises that could never be kept. Perhaps it was his sudden urge to shock, to be heard, to matter. Perhaps it was all these things, or none at all. Whatever the reasons, Andrew pulled away from his mother, sprang to his feet and yelled, "Liar! I wish it would happen. I wish the world would burn." He turned and stalked off to the basement on pale, wasted legs, slamming the door behind him. The report resounded with a ring of finality. The trees thinned out now as Andrew approached the top of the hill, summer snowflakes decorating his bare head and face. He tilted his head back and stuck out his tongue to catch them as he'd seen thousands of children do on 1,000 TV movies. They tasted like ash. He was shaky and out of breath when at last he reached his destination. He didn't think he'd have the energy to return home, but it didn't matter. There was no home to return to. Everything was gone. Obliterated. "I did this," he whispered to the silence, to the blazing sky and burning horizon. "I did this." Had Andrew not been in the basement at the time of the flash, he would have been vaporized instantly like every living thing for miles. As it was, he clawed his way up from the debris, dusty and dishevelled, but none the worse for wear, to find his every wish had suddenly, miraculously, been granted.
I wish it would snow. I wish they'd leave me alone. I wish I wasn't going to die before you and Daddy. I wish the world would burn. I did this.
Andrew stood there beneath the ash snowing down, staring awestruck at the blazing ruins of the city in the distance. Beyond the horizon, a towering pillar of cloud extended proudly into the heavens, lording over the destruction it had wrought. Andrew raised himself to his full height and did the same. Sometimes, destroying things can be good. He surrendered once more to memory, to bittersweet recollections of times gone by, lost forever. They belong to him now, and him alone, for memories are the domain of the living, and he remained the sole survivor. Standing atop the hill as the world around him burned, Andrew thought about forest fires. He smiled. So, I trust you enjoyed that powerful and evocative story. We would like to thank Jonathan for giving his permission for us to read his work. And if you'd like to hear him talk about his writing journey and some other thoughts on this story and other things, you can catch him on episode 11 of the podcast. If you would like to provide us some feedback, or if you'd like to suggest other great stories for us to read, either your own or someone else's, that you think might deserve a spotlight, then we'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch with us at readlotswritelots.com. In other news, you'll be pleased to know Deirdre's been hard at work behind the scenes, lining up a great list of writers for 2022, and we look forward to hearing about their writing journeys over the coming months. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us on our podcast, we'd love to hear from you. If you're interested but a little nervous about appearing on a podcast, don't be. As Deirdre likes to say, this is the world's most relaxed podcast. Well, that's it for this episode. So on behalf of Deirdre and myself, thanks for listening and bye for now.